Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. My name is Dan Mott, and we thank you for being with us this week, guys. We have a packed show today and a full group as well. We have Arthur Arkish, Eric Edholm, and Hub Arkish with us today, so quite the treat there. Arthur, what's going on, man?
Hey, everything's good. Hope you guys are doing well, too, as we get ready to ramp things up here in the preseason and training camp gets underway shortly.
Absolutely. Eric, how about you? How's your week treating you?
Not too bad. Yeah, I already, touched my toe down in the water down in Bourbonnais and hope to, get a good look at some of these other teams out there in the NFL.
And it's always great to have Hub on the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. Hub, how's things going with you?
Well, I've actually been a little underwater in Bourbonnais, but nonetheless, it's all fun. You know, it's weird. We've been in camp for a week with the Chicago Bears, and yet as we record on Wednesday, 22 teams reporting today and tomorrow. By the weekend, everybody will be in, and there's no question the NFL season is here, so let's go have some fun.
Of course, you can hear Hub on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast as well. Hub, Bob Laguerre, and I discuss all things Bears on that podcast, so be sure to check that one out. Today, we're going to be previewing some training camps around the league as teams report this week. Of course, the Bears and Ravens starting early last week with the upcoming Hall of Fame game about a week away. But first, guys, let's lead off with some headlines. Arthur, I'm going to start with you. Todd Gurley signed a massive extension this week, a four-year, $60 million extension that includes $45 million guaranteed. It's the largest guarantee given to a running back, the largest per year average for any running back. Arthur, what does this do for guys like Zeke Elliott, David Johnson, and some of these other running backs who are going to want this kind of deal?
Yeah, I guess the position is back, huh? As you alluded to, the biggest deal ever. For a running back, a position that we thought had been devalued, really had been devalued in recent seasons. So David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell are the first two that come to mind. Yes, Zeke Elliott too. But what's interesting with both Zeke and then, of course, Todd Gurley, there's a little bit of time left. That's why maybe it was surprising that the Rams did this now when they still had 2 years of relative cost control on his deal. And everyone knows Aaron Donald, the contract holdout last year before becoming defensive MVP, is waiting his turn and needs to get his deal done a year soon. So Gurley's 23. They saw that he was a vital part of Sean McVay's offense last year. There's no questioning his resume, his 2017 resume anyway. But I think it's always you have to look at this one with an asterisk until the Donald deal gets done. Less needed. Sean McVay say it will. It's just different timelines because it's likely to be the richest defensive contract ever at the time it's finally completed. But like I said, there's a bit of an asterisk here until they take care of the rest of their unfinished business, their in-house stuff.
It'll be interesting to see what they do with Aaron Donald as well, coming off of the Brandon Cooks big extension. It seems like the Rams are just kind of giving everybody money. Perhaps Hub, you want some money from the Rams?
I'll take money from anyone, Dan. Anybody who has cash, check, money order, just send it my way. The one thing, and Arthur alluded to it, it feels a little off to me that they got Gurley done before Donald. I mean, Aaron Donald was a holdout last year. We don't know how happy he's going to be or what his position is going to be this year. He is the dominant defensive player in the National Football League right now, has been more consistent for the Rams than Todd Gurley, and his contract expires sooner. So I think getting Gurley done is probably smart, and I think the money is probably reasonable off the season he had last year. But my guess is that even if they're friends, Donald's got to be scratching his head and saying, wait a minute, why would they do that? And so I don't know if they just made life a little more difficult for themselves. I don't know what the other guys think about that.
I thought it was pretty dumb. I mean, I hate to say it like that. I think Doc Gurley's an amazing player. I mean, there's a reason why he was, the offensive player of the year, 19 touchdowns was fantastic and in a comeback season. But you controlled his rights at reasonable cost for two more years. And as, as Hub and Arthur both noted, I mean, they're doing this 2 years early. Had they done Donald 2 years early, they would have saved money. And had they waited on Gurley, they would have saved money too. To go above and beyond, the highest guaranteed at signing figure for a veteran running back, a non-rookie running back, was Shady McCoy at around $18 million. So they went, 2.5 times that amount. I mean, think about that. That just completely sets the market in a way it hasn't been set before. So I might disagree with the idea that running backs have been devalued, given that we've seen some guys go in the top five, and those guys are, like Leonard Fournette and Ezekiel Elliott and people like that have earned more money than a lot of the veterans out there. So there's clearly been a little tendency in that direction, but this just felt sort of silly to me, even though they do want to lock the guy up long term. I still think they could have found a way to keep him a year or two from now. I just think it's way too early, given all the other deals they have to think about, Joyner, Donald, and the rest.
Eric, the NFL shelves the national anthem policy this past week. What does this mean for players, teams, and the league?
Well, it's in limbo right now, and the league and the union are meeting on this matter, and it's probably a meeting that should have occurred prior to this anthem policy being instituted in the first place. It was kind of, you know, run through committee, as they say, and it was kind of jammed down the players' throat with the idea that it was some sort of compromise, and the players didn't clearly feel that way. And, you know, all it did was take a barely smoldering issue. I mean, off the radar of most people by the playoffs, zero players were kneeling. You know, this thing could have gone away on its own, I think. And instead turn it into this wildfire. And so obviously it's you know, things have maybe come down to earth a little bit, but what happens in that Hall of Fame game? What happens in week one, especially if we don't have a new policy by either one of those things? So the good news is there is sort of guarded optimism, at least on the union side. People that I've talked to in the NFL wouldn't return phone calls on it, wouldn't make comments, wouldn't tell me what their side of things was. But there's at least this cautious belief that, you know, maybe they can come to some kind of true compromise to where most people are moderately happy, and whatever folks are in the extreme position on one side of the debate or the other, you know, look, they're probably never going to be happy anyway. So I think there's room for a common ground to be met here.
You know, guys, in this particular case, I think that Roger Goodell was smart enough to know there was another one-car funeral coming, and with their track record on screwing up the last five or six they've seen, he wanted to avoid it this time. This may be the first smart thing they've done in a while, just saying, we're not talking, we're going back to the drawing board. The bottom line on this one is I understand why they announced a policy a couple weeks ago. They knew it was a matter of time until Trump's next screw-up, when he was going to look for somebody to go after to try and cover it up, and sure enough, what happened, you know, he goes to Russia, he gets accused of treason by his own party, and 3 days later he's questioning the patriotism of NFL players. You know, it's hard to believe that any of this is going on in our society, but the NFL at least saw it coming, and they tried to avoid it. The problem is, there is no good answer for this, and so if they're really smart, what they'll do is never say another word about it again, and the next time Trump or somebody else comes after him on it, ignore him, because they can't control this. I mean, they really can't, if you think about it. Whatever they do is going to be wrong with somebody, and it's time that they just tried to bury it as best they could. And wouldn't it be refreshing if the next time, whether it was Donald Trump or some Democrat or whoever it may be, came after him, ignore him. See what happens. It does go away in a day or two. That's actually the reason that Donald Trump is still president. He ignores the stuff that matters.
Finally, in our headlines hub, Jimmy Garoppolo believed he was better than Tom Brady while in New England. Do you fault him for thinking that?
Guys, this is a classic case of you got to read the story. And the reason most people haven't, I took one look at it. I know it was over 10,000 words. I don't know what it was. And I don't know who has time. I didn't know that our peers still got the go ahead to do pieces like this. I mean, my God. And you really had to wade into it. He didn't think he was better than Tom Brady. He's talking about his own mindset and the way you have to approach the game. In no way was he taking a shot at Brady. He starts out the quote by calling him the GOAT. He knows what he's talking about. He was talking about his own attitude and approach to the game, and it would just be nice if people were going to take somebody else's story and report on it, at least make sure you put it in context for folks. I don't know if you guys agree or disagree, but in this case, I feel bad for Garoppolo, because he was just talking about, you know, getting himself ready to play the game, and I think the author understood that, but then people jumped on it, and now it's being positioned as something that he really didn't intend to say.
I think that article also goes on to say that it helped in creating a competition between the two while they were practicing together, and it was a good competition that he felt was going to help the Patriots if, in fact, there was an opportunity for him to step up in that position.
This is no different to me than, I don't know, Steve Young, Joe Montana, Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre. Of course the backup thinks at some point he's going to have his chance, and that, you know, do you want your number two thinking that, well, I'm not as good as this guy and I'll never be as good as this guy? What are the chances of him ever succeeding in the NFL? It's just not going to happen. So for Garoppolo to have confidence that he can be on par with Brady and be in the same room with him and be able to push him, I would hope he has that kind of confidence, you know? So yeah, I thought it was ridiculous to help, as you mentioned, whatever, how many ever words it was, 10,000 words, for it to be reduced to a 6-word headline, Garoppolo thinks he's better than Brady. I don't know if that's six, but whatever. It's ridiculous. And you wonder why players sort of hold back from talking to the media, you know, and Garoppolo's turned down a lot of other media obligations or requests this offseason. So when things are spun out of control like this, you understand why people are hesitant to make bold statements and what's really going on in their head. I thought it was a great quote, a great anecdote.
And Arthur, I don't want to edit your chance to comment on this, but just quickly, context again. I believe at home just compared Jimmy Garoppolo to Steve Young and Aaron Rodgers. And 8 starts in, that may be a little quick. I don't think that's what he meant. I know exactly what you meant.
Right. So. We don't have that kind of sample size, but I'm guessing that both of those guys at some point prior to earning the starting job thought, I know I can play on this level. Mm-hmm. I know I can play up to the Joe/Brett level. And if they didn't have that confidence, they wouldn't have become either a Hall of Famer or a Hall of Fame track player like Rodgers.
And it's worth just adding quickly, guys, I haven't read the story yet, so I'm not going to comment on that specifically. But those other guys didn't get their record-breaking contract with the second team based off, of course, just such a small and impressive sample size with the first one that they used and parlayed it into the new deal. So the expectations are understandably sky high for Jimmy Garoppolo, even if we don't understand some of these silly offshoots from this big story. All eyes will be on Jimmy G by the Bay, and that includes mine. I can't wait to see what he does.
Well, that'll do it for our headlines this week, guys. Let's get into some training camp previews. Around the league, teams are reporting to their respective camps, and we thought we would seek out some questions that need to be answered by teams over the next few weeks. Hub, we're going to start with you, and I know that you were down in Bourbonnais this past week watching the Bears as they prepared. You were talking about wanting to see a little bit more of the development of Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge question. The hopes in Chicago are sky high during this past offseason heading into camp. There are some goofy predictions being made out there. There's a lot of different factors, of course, the arrival of Matt Nagy and his apparent all-star coaching staff, some other changes they've made. I personally am excited about Trubisky. I think he's got a chance to be another one of these bright young quarterbacks. I think he could be very, very good. But in Chicago, people are talking as if he's already accomplished that, like he's ready for his first Pro Bowl. The fact is he had 12 starts last year. In those 12 starts, he threw just 7 touchdowns, also only 7 picks, which was nice. But so much of that was within the framework of what John Fox and Dowell Loggins were allowing him to do, which wasn't much and wasn't enough. He was the 28th ranked passer in the NFL. It is hard enough for an established veteran to learn a new offense, let alone one as innovative and exciting as Matt Nagy's. And there is so much more to learn about Mitch Trubisky. I think he's going to be very good. I think that Bears fans are way out over their skis on this, thinking he's going to get there a lot sooner than he might. This is going to take another year or two, and I don't expect him to be setting the league on fire first couple weeks of the season. I actually asked him the day we got to Bourbonnais, I'm already losing track of time, I said, Mitch, are you tired already of hearing the comparisons to the second seasons of Carson Wentz and Jared Goff? And for those who only read the answer and didn't see it, I was smiling at him. He smiled back at me. It wasn't a persnickety thing. He said, I'm just tired of it all. I just want to play football, you know. So it'll be interesting to see this kid get a chance to get lost in the rigors of training camp and focus on the game and how quickly he develops.
Hub, what other things are you looking for with some of these other teams around the league with their camps?
Well, I'm certainly interested to see what happens in Minnesota with Kirk Cousins, because I think what's been lost there, yes, he got this 3-year deal and he's going to be the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, and he definitely has a better resume than, of course, last year starter Case Keenum. But the fact is, Case Keenum was more productive in 2017 than Kirk Cousins was within the Minnesota offense. Does that mean that Cousins is now going to emerge as one of the top players in the NFL, a perennial All-Pro? Or is it possible that Cousins isn't that much of an upgrade over Case Keenum? So really curious to see that. I cannot wait to see where Deshaun Watson is at. I don't know how much we're going to see early, because we talk about these ACLs, and some of them are 12 to 18 months, and he is only really in that 8 to 10 month range right now. You get a freak like Adrian Peterson every once in a while who's 100% after 8 or 9 months. But again, Deshaun Watson, 7-game sample size, he could be better than than Wentz or Goff, but we don't know. And so I'm really excited to see him play football again. And then I don't know if it's just me, guys, but the Patriots depth chart as far as where they're going to be by the time they get to opening day is fascinating, because this is a team that's been to two straight Super Bowls, was close to winning two straight Super Bowls, and yet they've really even made more changes than usual by Bill Belichick standards. So kind of curious to see what this ball club looks like as camp develops.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated. We know from two decades or nearly that long, Bill Belichick's sort of modus operandi, and that is churning the roster every year and kind of reinventing themselves every year. So I guess specifically when it comes to the wide receiving core that traded Brandon Cooks and will be without Julian Edelman to begin the season, and reportedly is dangling Malcolm Mitchell after another knee injury, and he may not make their final roster. Interested to see how the makeup comes together. We've seen Brady thrive with whoever is thrown out there for him to work with, but he's going to be 41. Time's going to catch up to him eventually. So curious to see what the likes of Jordan Matthews and Chris Hogan and how some of these other guys assimilate. And I guess just defensively, Matt Patricia's gone. So we know Bill Belichick plays a huge part in everything they do there. But curious to see how this defense comes together after it was really under fire for a lot of last season.
Yeah, I mean, just, the return of guys like Dante Hightower is huge. Some of those second and third year players who were either out of action or out of position last year is going to help that defense out. I think Brian Flores will do a nice job. I think there's going to be improvement on that side of the ball, even with the loss of Patricia. So, obviously they've put a little more emphasis in the run game, it seems like, drafting Sony Michel high, using him, using James White, using Rex Burkhead. They re-signed him as well. Beefing up that offensive line. So, like Arthur said, I mean, every Patriots team has a different DNA. And, obviously it's nice when you have a starting quarterback for an 18-year run that kind of allows you to do that, cater to your roster to what the biggest needs are. But, yeah, that competition at receiver is going to be the talk of the next few weeks. How does it all shake out? Because, I couldn't tell you right now who their final five are going to be. I couldn't tell you what order they're going to be in the pecking order. So that's really the kind of the biggest drama, not this, this other stuff people are talking about with the off the field stuff and the relationship between Belichick and Brady. That doesn't interest me as much anymore.
Eric, what are some of your questions that you have for teams as they begin camp?
Yeah, I've got a few things. I mean, certainly Andrew Luck's health is going to be talked about a lot. And, I know he spoke Wednesday morning with a glint in his eye that we haven't seen in a long time and an optimism that hasn't been heard in a while. And so if they have a healthy Andrew Luck, we're talking about a team that, led after halftime in nine of their games last year. They were competitive. They were within one score in, I think, 11 of their 16 games entering the fourth quarter, in the fourth quarter. So that tells a lot about how competitive they were with, second and third string quarterbacks, with a very young secondary, with holes all over that roster. Maybe Chuck Pagano actually didn't do a horrible job coaching, but it's obviously a new staff there with Frank Reich. So where Luck is at is going to have a huge bearing, clearly, on the Colts season. We mentioned Earl Thomas at the top. His name's been bandied about in trade talk. Seattle's committing 10% of their salary cap to two guys who probably won't play this year, Thomas and Cam Chancellor. That's got to change, obviously. So he either stays or he gets traded to the team like the Raiders or like the Cowboys. That's something that along with his possible reporting, we're going to keep an eye on. I guess the rookie quarterbacks interest me a lot. And I would include the Browns in that, even though Baker Mayfield may have to sit and wait because they've said Tyrod Taylor's the guy. Is Josh Allen the first to play? Is Lamar Jackson gonna see the field early? And then also the last one would probably be, does Dez Bryant have a job? Is he going to end up with somebody? The Browns have talked about maybe bringing him in. Other teams like the 49ers have at least sniffed around. It may depend on how these teams feel a week into camp. Does their wide receiver depth chart look the way they want it to look? And maybe we throw the Patriots into that discussion. Who knows?
Hub, what do you think are teams' holdups with Dez Bryant and not signing him?
I don't think he's the football player he was when he came into the National Football League. You know, talking to people in Dallas the last couple of years, and especially last year, he had lost the ability to separate, and that's something that makes wide receivers special. Remember, Bryant always pretty much known for making plays down the field. He was not a short area passing game guy. One of the best athletes ever to play the position, was going to win almost every contested ball he went for because of that quick twitch explosion and the ability to go up and high point the ball over the top of people. And it appears, and this happens, believe it or not, in your late 20s, early 30s, that if you lose just 5% of what separates you from the other incredible athletes in the league, you're no longer special. Obviously, Dez Bryant always believed he was extremely special. He does have some attitude and mental issues that come along with the way he plays his game. And I think he's going to end up in camp somewhere. I think he's going to get a shot. But I think the reason that teams aren't clamoring is because they've seen the tape of last year and they realize that nobody's going to get the Dez Bryant of 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, guys, that's going to do it for the first half. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, Arthur and I will be asking our questions. Things will look a little different at Packers camp this year, and Arthur has a question for us revolving around that. Also, whose seat is heating up in Denver? I'll have that and more for you when we return. Welcome back, everyone. We are continuing our general camp previews around the league and asking some questions we hope to have answered as teams prepare for the start of the 2018-19 season. I'm Dan Mott alongside Arthur Arkish, Eric Edholm, and Hub Arkish. And guys, I'm starting with the Dolphins. Arthur, Ryan Tannehill's health, it looks like he's ready to come back. Do you think he returns to form for the Dolphins this season?
Boy, he better, because obviously they punted on the quarterback position when a lot of people thought they were going to be in the mix, drafting in the upper half of the first round. It seems like distant memory the last time we saw Tannehill on the field, of course. It's been a couple years now. He's had a couple serious knee procedures, but the Dolphins have remained committed to him. I believe that Adam Gase still is a talented quarterback developer, and it's easy to forget, but his career arc was still pretty impressive. He had made strides in each season when Gase arrived, and they were just getting a chance to start working together. So, but we have to mention now, of course, you get rid of Jarvis Landry. You got all kinds of changes up front. Jay Ajayi, of course, leaves last year. So not sure that he is going to return to an offense that was as talented as the one that he last worked in. So that'll be something that he has to overcome in addition to anything with the knee.
Eric, we're also kind of keeping our eyes on perhaps a kicking battle out in Oakland. You have rookie Eddie Pinheiro and Giorgio Tavecchio, who ultimately will be going head-to-head for that job. What do you think about perhaps a real kicking battle going on out in Oakland?
I couldn't be more excited, guys. I really now, obviously, you know, John Gruden has a lot going on in his first job out there. You know, Tavecchio has been, you know, kind of a fill-in and a guy they've had in camp behind Sebastian Janikowski in the past. There's some familiarity there that could give him a little edge. But, you know, I mean, Pinheiro had a really good college career. I mean, his college numbers and, you know, certainly stack up with some of the better kickers out there. I think Gruden even said he considered drafting him, you know, late in the draft, seventh round pick or something like that. So, you know, they had to kind of ward off, I think, about half a dozen other teams to sign him as an undrafted free agent. So, you know, maybe that gives him a little bit of an edge. He's always kicked in kind of good weather. We'll see if that, you know, obviously there can be a little rain and stuff out there in the bay. So that's going to be one test for him, but it may not be one we get in August. But of course, it's going to be nice and sunny most days, and the weather isn't going to be as big an impact. But yeah, that's a team that, you know, lost some close games last year, was actually pretty competitive despite their bad record in some situations. So, you know, the kicking game, as we've seen with other AFC West teams, has been an issue, and that's something to watch.
Hub, you had mentioned Watson earlier in the show. I want to focus a little more on J.J. Watt as well. Do you believe that he can return to form in Houston?
You know, I don't see any reason that he can't. He's had some pretty serious injuries, some pretty serious surgeries, but we're talking about a guy who was on his way to being arguably the most dominant defensive player in the history of the game. And I know that's saying something pretty substantial, but he was a defensive MVP 3 years running. I mean, nobody could stop him when healthy. He is still, you know, in the prime of his NFL career. Age-wise, he appears to be in very good shape. These have been completely different, if you will, albeit serious injuries. So it's all about, is he healthy? Is he rehabbed? You know, we're based in Chicago, and everybody's talking about Kyle Long, and he had three surgeries during the offseason. Yeah, he did, but they were three different procedures. They've been working to rehab them each individually. So when these athletes at the top of their game suffer these injuries, it's all about whether they can get back to 98, 100% health. There's no reason to assume that J.J. Watt will suffer some new catastrophic injury. The question is, how is the back going to be? How are the legs going to be? If he's 100%, I expect J.J. Watt to be unblockable again.
I got to ask you guys, have you seen the pictures of J.J. Watt? I mean, he looks like a Mr. Universe. He looks like a guy who's spent every minute of the offseason in the gym. I know he sometimes goes to that log cabin up in Wisconsin, but just from the pictures alone, I'm impressed. Now, what that was Hub said, that may not matter if he's got a balky back or his lower body starts to give out and joints and ligaments and things like that. That's a whole different story, but let me just say I've got a little body envy for what J.J. Watt's flashing these days.
But, Eric, it is a great point because I got to tell you, being around these guys for, 40-plus years on the beat now, I'm impressed by the pictures because we all wish that was us, but I'm not impressed by the pictures in terms of what it means for him playing football. As a matter of fact, it concerns me a little bit because sometimes these guys overdo it and none of those incredibly ripped muscles that you're looking at are the ones that were injured, you know? And so now the theory is that you strengthen the muscles in the core around where the injury occurred. So, you know, certainly his abs are significant. You don't really get a look at his obliques or anything like that. The lats are, they're significant, but people always react to that stuff, and it doesn't really tell you much about the actual injury that was repaired.
And promise me, you guys, we will never have a podcast like a PFW body podcast, like where we discuss each other's sprains. I just promise me that's never going to be on the docket.
Well, let me ask you guys a question, and Arthur, Eric, which one of you would want to do that? Because I don't. I got nothing to show. It's a
yeah, we all have bodies made for podcasting, guys. So let's not pull anyone with that. We will spare the listeners as much fun as that might be. I think we will vow not to do that.
That's our new tagline. I think we should put it on the website.
I'm only doing that if John Clayton will be a guest on that podcast with us.
Arthur, I'm directing
by, this. Excuse me. John's a good friend. That was not a shot at him. I think everybody knows where I was going there.
Arthur, I'm directing this final question to you. I know you joked with me before the start of the show at my savage comments on this, but my question is, will Vance Joseph really make it to the start of the regular season in Denver? I know that it's July, and yet he finds himself, along with a couple other NFL coaches, already on the hot seat before the season even starts. And, I mean, do you feel that, they were perhaps toying with the idea of letting Joseph go at the end of the season, and of course Elway, you know, hung on to him. If he has a shaky preseason, how quickly do you think they wait going into the season to perhaps cut him?
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to get fired in the preseason, but I get where you're going for sure. And Broncos fans, direct your feedback to Dan Moss. I'm just kidding. I do get exactly where you're going. There's no question. We had it on good authority that John Elway was waffling as late as into the day on that final Sunday of the season regarding what he was going to do. It was an 11th hour decision to bring back Vance Joseph for a second season. So it makes perfect sense what you're saying, that he is going to be under the spotlight to begin this thing. And, it's worth mentioning he'll get the Vikings, the Bears, Washington, and Arizona in the preseason. Yes, he's gonna survive the preseason. But we should also note that while the offensive coordinator was getting a new quarterback and a new potential feature running back, a new right tackle, the defense, yes, he got Bradley Chubb. There's no question that he'll make great use of him, or he should. But you lose Aqib Talib. You lose another starter in the safety core. So Joseph is actually being asked to do more with less on defense, while it's the offense that's going to get a lot of help. So we'll see. I think he deserved another shot to get this right, considering the fact that they've had so much instability at quarterback there. But they better hope that Case Keenum is the answer, because he's really Vance Joseph's best shot, in addition to that star-laden defense of surviving this thing.
Arthur, let's wrap things up with a look at a few questions you're hoping teams answer in their training camps. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I'm starting just a couple hours north in Green Bay and very interested to see what life is like in Packers camp without Jordy Nelson and Morgan Burnett. Maybe those guys are on the back nine of their careers. They probably are. But I think anyone with that team will tell you how much they meant. Morgan Burnett is sort of that on-field traffic cop. Just the brains of the operation for many years. And some will say, well, that pass defense stunk. But Morgan Burnett's a good football player, really smart one, and curious to see who's ready to step up and what's definitely going to be a really young secondary. Yes, they have Devon House and Tremont Williams comes back. But in Josh Jones and Kevin King and the two rookie corners, it's going to be young back there. And I wonder if they're going to miss Burnett's presence. Same thing on offense. Yes, Jordy Nelson is slowing down, but you drafted three wide receivers. You're passing the baton to Devontae Adams. You're hoping Randall Cobb can kind of turn back the clock a little bit. So, and not to mention just, you know, Jordy Nelson has been Aaron Rodgers' lifeline, his kind of sideline savant, if you will. So just curious to see who he starts going to in life after Jordy Nelson. A couple others I have here. The new look Chiefs offense, guys. Does Patrick Mahomes, is the instant coffee under Andy Reid there? And with that awesome supporting cast he's going to have with Tyreek Hill, Kareem Hunt, and Travis Kelce, his triplets, if you will. Really excited to see, because I know that his game is very exciting and has Chiefs fans really just anxious to see what this next era of Chiefs offensive football is going to look like. I'll throw it to you guys here in a second, but my other two ones on the flip side of that trade, Alex Smith in Washington now. I think he fits very well with what Jay Gruden wants to do, but I don't think he is going to have the type of supporting cast that he did in Kansas City. So what can Darius Geis and Paul Richardson do? Can Jordan Reed finally stay healthy? Jamison Crowder in a contract year. You know, Josh Doctson in a make or break year. It could look good, but there's a lot of moving parts. And finally, out in Los Angeles, I almost said San Diego, the Chargers. Guys, I think they have a Super Bowl caliber roster. I really do. But already the Chargers curse struck for the first time a couple months ago with the Hunter Henry injury. So, Eric, I'll throw it to you first and sticking with the Chargers. Do you worry about losing Hunter Henry and who steps up? Because apparently they're not that interested in bringing back Antonio Gates, at least to this point.
Yeah, less so than had it happened on day one of camp or midway through the preseason or something like that. Obviously, I really liked Hunter Henry as an emerging talent. I don't see another tight end on that roster who makes me think, okay, they've got a diamond in the rough or anything like that. I mean, maybe Virgil Green becomes a good blocker and, you know, that sort of thing. He's just been a guy that's kicked around for a few years. So instead, you know, they'll roll out four pretty good wide receivers and do that most of the time. And Keenan Allen, Mike Williams has promise. You know, Tyrell Williams has played well in stretches. Travis Benjamin was a thrill a minute last year. They have this kid, Dylan Cantrell, a sixth-round pick out of Texas Tech, who could, you know, he's worked in the slot. He's worked outside. He could be their very talented fifth guy as well. So I think you're just going to see a lot more three, four, and five wide receiver sets. You know, I know they're a little thin at running back, too. They've got to have somebody like Justin Jackson emerge. But I'm better with the idea of Henry going down early as opposed to late and kind of throwing a wrench in their plan. So I like this team. I still think they have that firepower.
Yeah, guys, I'm with you. I don't have them as a Super Bowl club. I think there's enough questions that I've got to keep them a notch below the Pats and the Steelers, but I do like them to win the West. I think they, if they continue to develop, because they're a little younger than those two teams, they could be ready to contend by the end of the season. There's no disputing that Henry is a big loss. Now, I've seen several reports this morning that they are negotiating with Antonio Gates to possibly come back for one more year, but anybody who saw Gates last year, you know, knows that he's a shadow of himself. I think the key, and Eric just mentioned it, people forget Mike Williams. You know, you're talking about a top 10, top 15 pick who is supposed to be a number one receiver. There's no question Keenan Allen's your number one. Williams missing a bunch of his rookie year with the back problems, but if he is a number one receiver, then I think they just retool a little bit. They get a couple blocking tight ends out there. They like to throw the ball to their running backs. So there's no disputing that Hunter Henry is a significant loss. He was blossoming him into a Pro Bowl type tight end, but it is one that they can overcome more so than if they had that injury, say, on the offensive line where they're better but still, you know, working on it a little bit in the secondary at safety. I do think that's an injury they can overcome.
Yeah, great points, guys. It's easy to forget that Mike Williams really is akin to an extra first-round pick for the Chargers this year, and his skill set should kind of align with what they're going to lose in Hunter Henry, especially down by the goal line. And then let's just wrap it up going back to the Chiefs. I know, Hub, you're curious to see Patrick Mahomes, too, and I'm just fascinated because it looked to me like Andy Reid kind of almost started planting the seeds for what that offense could look like with the bazooka launcher, bazooka-launching rookie last year as he started to stretch the field more vertically. It would seem to be a natural fit as now you introduce Mahomes with his incredible arm and, as we already alluded to, really incredible skill position talent.
You know, guys, I'm a little puzzled by some of our peers in the national media just drooling and falling all over themselves over Patrick Mahomes. I mean, I'm curious about it. You know, he's definitely an incredible athlete with an absolute hose for an arm. He may have the best arm in football. But he played one game. I mean, you know, again, we've got to see. He's one of these system quarterbacks out of college. There's so much more to the position than just having a cannon for an arm. And, you know, as great as Andy Reid's coaching tree is, when you see these teams constantly bleeding top assistants, and while Andy Reid is an offensive coach, he lost both of his top offensive guys in Matt Nagy and Brad Childress. And there's been some other attrition on that team. So I'm fascinated to see it. The weapons are incredible, but I have nothing to base any kind of predictions, Eric, for Patrick Mahomes. I mean, we'll see. I want to watch him play, and maybe by midseason, late season, we'll have a better idea. But right now, all he is 11 starts behind Mitch Trubisky and 6 starts behind Deshaun Watson.
I'm sure it's nice that he got plenty of experience in college playing in the Big 12, where every week seemed to be about a 49-42 final score. He's going to be in a lot of shootouts this year. You know, you're asking a lot out of him. He doesn't have to be perfect, but he's got to produce a lot. And, you know, people are expecting the downfield throws, the scrambling ability, all this other stuff that he can do. Yeah, look, it's great. He's a tough kid, too. He took a lot of hits in college. That was something I was very impressed with watching the tape and just saying, man, this kid keeps peeling himself off the turf and making throws. But to do so with what I think is a well below average defense until proven otherwise, you know, he's going to have to go out there knowing that he's got to get 7, you know, most of the times that he's driving down the field. And that's a little extra pressure for them, too. And they face a gauntlet of good quarterbacks this year. So that's what I'm worried about, is less necessarily about him. You're right about the experience, but more about what he's going to be asked to do every single week with a defense that could allow 24, 27 points more weeks than not.
And guys, if I could just put a bow on this conversation, there's been some Brett Favre comparisons, just the arm talent and just the gunslinger mentality. And as Eric was just saying that about how maybe Mahomes is going to have to press a little bit internally because of the defense's shortcomings, and I couldn't agree with that more. It's a spot-on assessment. It sort of reminds me of Favre later in his career, maybe throughout his career. He was always pressing and always thought he had to do everything. But it will be fascinating to watch Mahomes' processing and, more importantly than anything, his decision-making. Can he stay under control? Can he, you know, when the time is right, kind of pass those big shots down the field and take the layups? Because that's what he's going to have to do to be successful early on.
Well, fellas, that'll do it for our look around the league, and hopefully some of these teams will answer these questions for us as they continue their training camps. Be sure to keep your eyes glued to ProFootballWeekly.com for the latest camp news around the NFL 24/7. Guys, I know most of you have been spending some time down in Bourbonnais at Bears camp. Are there any other camps you guys are going to be checking out over the next couple weeks?
Well, we're sending Eric out on the road. I know that. We've got a chance with some of these teams practicing against each other. I will be in Denver in a couple weeks. I'll give you the latest on you know, whether Lance Joseph is buying any property or anything like that. Eric, refresh my memory. I know you're going to see the Lions, the Colts. I want to say the Giants, the Ravens. Is that it?
Yeah, the Giants will be headed to Allen Park, the Detroit Lions joint practice with them. 3 days, actually. It's pretty interesting. So I'll be catching a portion of that and then heading south a couple hours to Indianapolis where the Baltimore Ravens come in. And so it's going to be, you know, the Lamar Jackson, Joe Flacco thing and the Andrew Luck thing. And, yeah, a lot of interesting quarterbacking stuff with all four of those teams and some OBJ talk mixed in there. And, yeah, all four have some real intrigue to them, I think. And we'll see if I can make it up to Green Bay or not and kind of go from there.
Well, we want to thank you all for listening this week, and we hope that you head on over to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast if you've not already done so. Also, head over to ProFootballWeekly.com for the best NFL news 24/7. Like these guys said, they'll be reporting from some of these other camps, so be sure to check that out. We also have an event reminder. I know that we mentioned this last week, and we're going to continue to mention this as we head on, or as we get closer to the event. Our Pro Football Weekly event Saturday, September 8th at the Rouse Center for the Arts in Crystal Lake, Illinois for Football Legends Live presented by Rum Chata and the Centegra Health System. This two-hour program will include several Pro Football Hall of Famers, including Brian Urlacher, Mean Joe Green, Lawrence Taylor, Anthony Munoz, Randy White, and Dan Hampton, along with MCs Pat Boyle and Dave Kaplan, and Pro Football Weekly's very own Hub Arkish, as well as other surprise guests as we celebrate Pro Football Weekly's honorary team for the ages and greatest Bears team of the modern era. Tickets are on sale now at ProFootballWeekly.com, so be sure and get yours today. As always, a big thanks to Umphreys McGee for the use of our theme song, Out of Order. You can find them on iTunes as well, so go and check them out. We want to thank you once again for listening. And for Eric Edholm, Hub Arkish, and Arthur Arkish, I'm Dan Mott. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Take care, everyone.